Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and today we are here to talk about a really cool graphic novel, Smart Girl. And the writer and artist, Fernando Dagnino, is here to tell us more about this intriguingly written and stunningly drawn book. Hi, Fernando.
Hi, how are you doing, Summer?
Pretty good. I love this story. There's an emotional element I did not expect in a story about an android who decides to go rogue and tell her masters, her control is like, you know, I'm done. I got other things to do. See ya. And the journey she goes on, I don't want to give any spoilers, but the journey she goes on is more than just discovering who she really is. And that trip is so, there's levels of mystery, there's levels of corporate espionage, there's levels of emotional development and stunning artwork. So thank you for giving us something this cool to check out.
Well, thank you for your words. I really, really fond of the way you've described it, really.
So where did the idea for Yuki's story come from?
It originally came from a short story I had like written that for myself about the obsolescence of an android or of a genoid, and how this makes like an analogy with how we relate to persons sometimes, how we objectify persons, and how we, well, you know, human relations can be obsolescent sometimes, sometimes prematurely. So it was about this society, just as in the book, in which the elites have these companions, these androids and genoids that use for, you know, the squads, laptops, bodyguards, lovers, whatever. And they just last, as we do with our cell phones, they just last for, you know, 2 years, 3 years. They made to end at some point, so you can buy another one. And what if you were one of these? What if we would apply like you know, some sort of humanity to these characters, these androids and genoids that are being, used and then thrown away. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, has many, many analogies about the working market, about how human relations, and that interested me a lot.
Yeah, the parallel of that with, you know, people who are working in a career, as they get older, they're sort of like shoved aside for younger workers, and that I think that resonates with every generation. And just seeing her, for lack of a better word, snap at having her perception of being needed and wanted as a sentient being just cast aside was heartbreaking. And the way you drew her reactions to having those emotions is what caught me. For people who haven't seen the book yet, all of the artwork is black and white. And normally I get disappointed when I see something is only black and white, but this, there are depths in the artwork that you drew that after a while you kind of forget that it's in black and white. And after I read it, and then I read it again, I kind of came to my own conclusion that colors might have lessened some of the emotional impact that Yuki was feeling, and not just her, but other marginalized characters who show up in the story. And I just wanted to know, was the choice to go all black and white something that was there from the start?
Yes, it was, but not for an artistic reason. I mean, I knew from the start that this was a kind of a suicidal project I just embarked myself in, and I had limited time dash money to do it. So making when doing like 190 pages in color, or even like hiring someone to do it would be like, at the point when I was doing it would be like, impossible. So knowing that, I just chose for this grayscale sort of gloomy ambient to do it. So knowing I would do it in black and white, I decided to go for an ambient that would really be proper for the story, using the grays and the black and whites in such a manner that yeah, it transmits. And besides, one thing, one of the many things I makes me like be in love with comics. It's I think the readers have a sort of a creative reading that doesn't happen with cinema or video games, where the lack of information, being this, for example, the lack of music, lack of movement, or the lack of color, provides for the reader like to create their own film in their mind. And for me as a reader, I've experimented the same thing. I've read comics in black and white when I was a kid, and I remember them in color because I just made the film up myself. I was just dreaming, daydreaming.
Wow, that's funny because I remember the first time, I think it was the first time I got an actual comic book from a comic store that was all black and white, and it was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, that early run, that first run. And I went, "Wait, my comics are supposed to be in color. Hey, cool, this is a neat story."
Exactly.
But I don't think it hit me until the second time I went through it that the way the story is framed with, the blacks, whites, and grays, it reminded me of, film noir, one of those old stories from the 40s, but it's a modern tale and told in that style. And I was just like, I would love to see this as an animated story, but I don't know if you'd be adding to it or taking away from it by having it in color. What do you do? So I will just be satisfied for the graphic novel for now and ask more about your approach to writing for comics and then drawing what story you're telling.
Well, this was my second attempt at drawing, at writing. I wrote like a previous novel in Spain, like for young audiences. So I would say it's the first comic I write like for an adult audience. And I was just experimenting in the sense that I wrote a like a technical first script that worked as a first draft. So what I did is that I kind of have this like schizophrenic process in which I would split into myself the writer and then myself the artist. But then, yeah, because many things I did when writing the comics maybe would have been unnecessary. So what I did is which each step of drawing the comic, that meaning that and the storyboard, the pencils, the inking, and then some tweaking at the end, which in each phase I would use it as a redrafting of the script. So I would change things as I was like evolving. And really some of them were really like not substantial, but really heavy changes. Adding and taking pages, because with each phase I saw the flaws and how they would these things would improve if I added these, if I took away the other thing, how some scenes were really very dense and were really. So, it's been kind of alive until the end.
How long did it take you to get from like your initial storyboarding to the place where you were satisfied that you had achieved the story you wanted to tell?
From the moment I started writing the script, it was like almost 2 years since I finished the comic. But
Wow.
the short story was written way before. The short story was from 2014. But yeah, man, 2 years for the whole process, I would say. Yes.
Is there more to the story waiting to be told?
Yes, I'm planning for a sequel, but it's not. For the moment, it's a sequel about the world in which it takes place. It's about Oxford City, and it will take place in a in an even more distant future. So it's not an immediate sequel. The one I'm working in right now, it's a continuation of the world in which it takes place, and I think there are many stories there that have been like hinted in the background, and it would be like nice to portray these secondary characters that you can see sometimes in the story and add new ones because there's a lot of conflict there, and I wanted to portray.
Yeah, the story of the intelligences, the entities hiding in the transatlantic cable. I'm like, wait, what? I'm like, wait, you're just gonna move on from that and not tell me more? Wait. That whole sequence, I'm like, that needs to be told. There's a it bugged me that I wasn't getting more about what happened there.
As I said, I mean, of course, it's my second attempt at writing, so I think I would, yeah, I should like, I mean, segment more and dosify a little bit the information I'm giving, because there was a as I had plenty of time to write a story, as I told you, yeah, there's a whole world behind, and yes, I think it needs like further explanation in following comics.
Yeah, just following that story of their, I guess, rebellion. I mean, that in itself would be an awesome standalone. I mean, that whole entire story, the setup you laid for that was compelling and cliffhangery. So yeah, if you get around to doing that one, let me know. So, Smart Girl came out November 9th, if I'm correct.
Yes. I mean, yeah, in the Titan version, yes, it was
Yes.
released
Okay.
previously in France and Spain, and this English version was released, yes, on the 9th and 10th. I don't
Okay.
remember.
Yeah, so folks can go out and find it now in their favorite local comic book shops. Is there anything new you're working on that will be coming to English audiences?
But yes, I've been I'm still in the drawing the ongoing series of Blade Runner Origins, which is like a prequel to the original Blade Runner movie, and I have still like three more issues to go till we end like the first year one, they call it. So that's being released like constantly, like monthly, and I think it's been the last issue published was issue 8, I think. So there's still more 4 to go. And then I have to finish another creator-owned project I'm doing for France, which I'm writing and drawing. It's Winter Queen, a thriller. And for the moment, I mean, that will lead me up into the middle of next year. So that's it for the moment.
So no plans for any more original stories just yet?
The thing is, I mean, I mean, Winter Queen is already. I mean, I've written the script. It's done. It's approved. It's signed the contract. So I just have to draw it. So in the meantime, what I do is, I mean, while I'm working this winter and springtime in this French comic, I'll be writing the sequel, or the I wouldn't like to call it the sequel, but the extension of the world of Yuki of Smart Girl.
Nice, cool. So, where can folks find you online to keep track of both your creator and personal projects? Because, like I said, the artwork in Smart Girl, once I got past the oh, it's in black and white, and I was like, ooh, it's in black and white. That's just some stunning work, and we'd like to find out how to keep up with you.
I mean, it's easy because of my surname. There aren't many languages around, so you can find me on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. It's Fernando Lagnino, and I've just initiated like a project which it's called Black with Stars, and it's a website that I'm doing with a friend of mine and writer Andrew Scott. And it will start it's an online magazine that deals with the three things we love most, and it's comic books, science fiction, and mythology.
Nice.
And we, So if you want to check that website, we're like launching every week kind of an articles on mythology and science fiction, and of course that's where I'm releasing now my art and the sketches and everything, all the work in process I'm doing. So that's one thing to check on. Okay, thank you.
Cool. Well, we will have links to that to find, because that website sounds really interesting, and I can't wait to go check it out. But we will keep an eye out for your future projects. Fernando, thank you so much for your time today, and thank you for this story.
Thank you so much, and I really—I must say—I'm one of one of the persons that really, I mean, described it best. I was really fond of the way you described the story, really.
Well, I had fun reading it because, those sort of quasi-dystopian or technology ahead of humanity type stories really intrigue me, and seeing the ways different people approach telling a story about that world is a lot of fun for me. And Smart Girl was a lot of fun. So again, thank you for getting that story out there.
Thank you. Thank you for your words.
And we shall return with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Escape Pod is your destination for the best in modern short science fiction. Our intrepid crew of editors and hosts will bring you fun, thought-provoking, in-flight entertainment every week as the pod careens around the multiverse. In the mood for a classic? We've got Anson Mount, also known as Captain Christopher Pike, reading Theodore Sturgeon. Want something a little more up-to-date? Jennifer R. Donahue's Surveillance Fatigue has you covered in every sense. From classic space opera to intimate character drama, from heroic alien pets waiting for their families, to herds of literal Einsteins and the benevolent conspiracy they're hatching, Escape Pod has it all at escapepod.org. So buckle up, because it's story time.
Hi guys, this is Tom Allison. I play Pree on Killjoys, and you're listening to A Slice of Sci-Fi.
And again, the book is Smart Girl. It is out from Titan Comics, available now at your favorite comics retailer. Go check it out. The art is very stylistic and compelling. And the story, there's a lot of layers in that story. And I do, in fact, hope to see more eventually. But what graphic novels have surprised you this year in 2021, the year of the crazy? Let me know. Send me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com. Or, yeah, you can still call in voicemail messages, 602-635-6976. And let me know if there's a graphic novel out there that came out this year that you'd like to find a little bit more about. You can ask the question here. You can also ping me on Twitter at Slice of Sci-Fi and get a conversation started over there, or here on the website, sliceofscifi.com. Leave a note in the comments and get that conversation started. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Player FM, and iHeartRadio. And if you're listening on Apple or Stitcher, consider leaving us a review. Let people know you are enjoying this show and they should check it out for themselves. And you can also leave a review or a rating over on Podchaser. And I'd like to thank everyone who is currently helping to support our efforts here at Slice of Sci-Fi, either listening to the show, telling other people about the show, and donating, pledging to help us out financially, because It helps. Every little bit does help. You guys who are supporting either through pledges through Patreon, through donations through PayPal or Ko-fi, you are helping keep all of this online and to help it keep going far into the future, we hope. For people who are Patreon supporters, you guys are eligible for perks. Everyone who is a Patreon supporter who chooses to be in the perks program, those folks are eligible for prizes, perks, I call them. I get a lot of review materials around here, books, DVDs, Blu-rays, 4Ks, and I just don't have the space to keep all of it. So the supporters, friends of the show, fans of the show, you all get first dibs at some of the goodies I have here, and the quickest way to get them, other than giveaways, is through being a Patreon supporter, and I'm trying to figure out how to loop Ko-fi into that as well, so working on that. But if you want to add your support, you can go to either patreon.com/sliceofsci-fi, ko-fi.com/sliceofsci-fi, or paypal.me/sci-fi-summer. And that'll do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. And if you're in the mood, you can send an email or leave a voicemail. What was your favorite TV show or movie or graphic novel or game, video game or tabletop game for 2021? We're making a list. We're checking it twice. And like to see how many people want to weigh in with what they enjoyed, what they spent their time on, their cash on in 2021. I'll make a little impromptu party out of it. But we will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.